What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and I'm back on the Brute Strength Podcast. This episode, I interview Stan Pastuche and Jeremy Todd of Active Life RX. Our discussion today is based on one central problem, and that is that athletes and exercise enthusiasts in general spend an enormous amount of time and energy working on mobility, flexibility, and injury prevention. And a lot of times, we're simply just putting a Band-Aid over the issue. And so these guys practice and this discussion revolves around how to create a system that produces long-term results using structural balancing as well as your traditional mobility exercises and such. It's almost like a paradigm shift of the way we look at mobility and injury prevention. As always, you can find the show notes at brutestrengthtraining.com/podcast. Hope you enjoy the show. Hey, I'm Mike Cashew. This is the Brute Shoot, the Brute Strength Training Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Drew Canavero.
Hello.
Jeremy, Sean. I said I would never do it again. That would be the last time. We're in New Jersey. We're not in New Jersey yet. We're in Long Island at their CrossFit gym, CrossFit Island Park, and they have their physical therapy clinic right next door, the Active Life. Thanks for letting us come join you guys.
No problem. Happy
to be here.
Good to be here in New Long Island. First time.
All right, so. To start this off, what is your guys' definition of mobility?
I'll take that.
So our definition of mobility is a combination of an athlete's ability to take their flexibility and their isolated strength and combine them. So what that means is flexibility is we take somebody and we say, if you were completely passed out, right, we had full flaccid mobility of everything. We can move you around.
Passed out and flaccid. Sounds like every college party. Continue. Passed out and flaccid. Continue.
Would your joints go through a full range of motion? Right? If you had no opportunity to resist it, no pain from it, nothing. Can we take you through a full range of motion? That would be flexibility. Isolated strength is, are you able to move a single joint using your own musculature without any kind of apparatus to help you get through it, right? There's no coupling. There's no, you know, force transfer from your hips to your shoulders. It's just, can you straight up raise your arm in front of you? Okay. Flexibility would be the opportunity to do that without force, so passively. And then isolated strength is the opportunity to do that with force, so actively. When you combine those two things, your mobility is how far you're able to take that range of motion under your own force.
Gotcha. Can you give us an example, a real-life example of that?
Sure. So, you know, we look at people all the time, and we test people before we put them into movement. So let's say, for example, you have an athlete who wants to press overhead and just can't get his head through at the top or can't lock his elbows out at the top, and whatever it is, right? I mean, Drew, you sent us a video of a guy who struggled to lock his elbows out at the top.
I didn't. We're putting Easton Evans on blast right now.
Yeah, okay.
Come on, Easton.
We're talking about you.
Easton, CrossFit weight room, obscenely strong, and he could be that much stronger if he could
open his elbows.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the question first becomes, why can't somebody like that lock out overhead, right? Why can't somebody like that get their head through? So we would test him out first, lay him on his back, have him extend his elbow on his hand, and just reach his hand over his head and see if he can touch his fingers to the floor. That would be flexibility, right? Then we say, okay, stand up. Can you get your hand to the same position you got it to when you were laying on your back? If you can, he's just as mobile as he is flexible, right? Then you put a barbell on his hand, you have him press overhead, and we can say, okay, well, he can't do it with the barbell on his hand, but he can do it on the floor passively, standing up actively. What happens when we enter a load? So that's where we go from mobility to force production, strength, skill, all those other things. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And another way that I like to think about it, we talk about it at our seminars, is when you think about gymnastics, that flexibility component is can a gymnast slide down into a split, right? Versus that mobility, can they do a jump split, right? Can they fall down into that passively, or are they able to jump up and pull themselves up into that same range of motion?
Out of it, right?
Yep.
So mobility now involves an element of, you know, velocity or additional range or something along those lines. You talk about passive and then being able to then jump and then land again in that split.
Jump and hit the split in the air.
Yeah,
so that's
okay.
that passive flexibility, but now do you have the strength to hit that same range of motion?
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Excellent. So if we're looking at passive, as Sean referred, flaccid flexibility, are both sides of that coin, the flexibility and mobility, are they equally and kind of reciprocally important? Can you have one without the other being as well developed? So you have, for instance, someone who demonstrates good passive flexibility, poor mobility, or, you know, in my case, I think I'm functionally dysfunctional in a lot of respects, right? Maybe don't demonstrate good passive flexibility, but I'm able to meet certain movement standards under load. So is that something that is more common, or you can't really exhibit a workable degree of mobility without prerequisite flexibility?
Well, I that's a good question. I think that the thing that gets confused in especially the, you know, the functional fitness CrossFit grid world is full range of motion for a human versus full range of motion for a given exercise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just because you're able to take a bar over your head, get your head through so your ears are in front and the elbows are locked out at the top, does not mean that your body has gone through its full range of shoulder flexion, shoulder abduction. It doesn't mean that your torso is perfectly upright. We don't very often find people who function better under a load than in the absence of a load. They are rare when they do exist, but more commonly it's somebody who says, okay, I have the necessary flexibility to do this, but for whatever reason, I can't once load is introduced, right? Or I can't do it even actively on my own without load. So we usually find that somebody who has the necessary flexibility and the inability to move through load and get to that same range of motion, right? So thus their mobility, needs what we call our functional capacity work, where we take them to the gym and we actually work on the ranges of motion that they're poor in and have them repeat exercises in those ranges until they improve on them.
Basically, just a test, retest kind of paradigm.
Yeah.
It's
test,
well.
Retest, and then more importantly, retest before we teach again.
Ah, yes. So
is it acute or...
Right. So the thing that we like to... One of the things that we're able to hang our hat on is that when people come in and we assess them and then we treat them and then we reassess them, there's improvement. A lot of guys can show that. A lot of women can show that. A lot of professionals, right? What we hang our hat on is that when you come back in for visit number two, we're going to test you before we start, and you're going to be better than you were before your first visit. So that first assessment is going to be your worst assessment ever.
So, yeah, your example that you gave me, a couple of days ago, if you rub your tricep on the table for long enough, you're going to get, some tissue lengthening.
Right.
You're going to get some mobility from that, right? There's just so many different ways that you can get an immediate response, but what we're looking for is when you're just resting, just sitting on your couch, are you looser than you were? Are you more mobile than you were? Right.
Right. Are you still humping the same lacrosse ball you were humping,
you know,
2 years ago, and getting the same reflexive results that last for your workout and then are gone the next day?
Right. And I think a lot of athletes can really relate to that, because I personally, especially towards the end of my career in sports in general, with my back issues, I would spend 30 minutes just to not want to just die, right? I was in so much pain all the time. And I had, mine was worse, but than most people, but I just spent so much time just fighting it. You know, it was just constant. And I could spend an hour one day and then I would come in the next day and it's just as bad. So there's got to be lasting change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
whether it's progression, whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a time waste, right? That's an hour a day you're feeling that you're spending to feel good for your training that you're not training, right? And then you're feeling there's no net progress the next day. So, yeah, we can be doing better.
And the other thing, there's a lot of good stuff out there, right? We're not the only guys who know how to help people. There's a lot of good stuff out there. The problem is there's so much stuff out there that there isn't an authority. People haven't found one voice that they're like, I'm just going to follow what that guy says to do, and I'm going to do it to exhaustion.
Right.
So it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and they don't get anywhere. It's like following, you know, brute programming for a week and then hopping over to comp training and then hopping over to Invicta and something else and saying, I'm not getting the results I want to get.
Right. The way I look at it, too, is like there's strength training, and within strength training, there's Westside, 531, just so many different ones. And within that, there's so many different exercises, variations, intensities, volumes, etc. And if you just hop around from one to the other, the beginner may get something right out of the gate, and then soon you're going to plateau. And so what people really need is some kind of system, right? They need to follow a system, and I think that's what you guys are getting at with this whole mobility piece, is you formed a system that works. It's not necessarily better than any of these other, you're using movements that are already being used and stuff like that, but you have a progression about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not reinventing the wheel,
right?
What we're doing is we're being unapologetic about asking people to do what's actually going to work. Instead of putting out content that gives them that reflexive change and makes them feel good for 5 minutes to an hour and then comes back the next day. We understand that people can be slower to adapt to what we're doing because what we're asking them to do is hard. You know, when someone says, I'm not flexible enough to do X, Y, Z, and we say, okay, well, go strengthen the following muscles, their first answer is, I said I'm not flexible enough. Why would I want to strengthen something? And we require that they understand that answer. So it's just a different approach.
Right. Is this accurate? This is kind of my understanding of what you're talking about. For instance, if you want to get your psoas, your iliopsoas more flexible, lengthen that tissue, then you need to strengthen some of your posterior chain, right? Like it works in an antagonistic kind of way. Does that play a role in what you're talking about at all?
I'd say it plays a role, but it's certainly not the be-all and the end-all, right? And Jeremy, you can elaborate on this also. Sometimes that psoas muscle is stiff, sometimes it's short. And what we tell people all the time is nothing is ever tight. Something feels tight, right? So something either is stiff or is short. And something that's stiff could be protecting another injury from becoming a problem, right? And we'll talk about that with the sciatic nerve and the hamstring, but we'll stay on your psoas for a second. Something that's short has been injured maybe for a long time and just has lost muscle, right? And there are two very different ways of treating them. So if you're talking about the reciprocal inhibition of strengthening up your glutes so that you can lengthen up your quad, yeah, that works in some cases and to some degree. But if, let's say, for example, you have an acute disc injury and that psoas is clamping down just to keep some spinal stability and to inhibit your ability from moving for a moment, all the stretching in the world, all the strengthening of your glutes, all your body's going to do is clamp down and make that psoas even tighter, even stiffer, right? You want to elaborate on that?
Well, yeah, it's just the treatment needs to fit the diagnosis, right? So you feel like you're short across the front of your hip. Well, why?
Probably like
why?
Back pain most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. Most people are probably going to feel just back pain, yeah.
Yeah, people don't usually come in and say, my psoas hurts.
Right.
You know, people will come in and say, oh, I saw some guy, and he said, you know, my psoas needs work, but... You know, we like to try to avoid just jumping to the most common structure that everybody wants to be treating and deciding if that's actually what needs to be treated. Mm-hmm. You know, we're fortunate that most of the people who come to us have already been to two or three or four other practitioners, and in a lot of cases without success. So it's easy for us to say, well, what did they work on? Mm-hmm. Right? And then we say, okay, well, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and I think the psoas sometimes isn't that mix, sometimes it's not that mix, but it's never really just if A then B for us.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So let's talk about let's go into your idea of stress and then maybe a little bit about how you go about correcting, like specifically how you go about correcting people's mobility and stuff. So can you tell us about your definition of stress?
Sure. Our definition of stress is anything that is going to drive your adaptation, right? So in the gym, it's going to be what is going to make you better the next time? What is going to put your body on alarm to say, oh, crap, I got to be better next time, and I got to be prepared for that, all right? Like, you can trickle that down to psychological and nutrition and sleep and all that stuff too. But as far as the strength component is anything that's going to drive that adaptation, right? You need that stress, and you need that recovery from that stress to become adapted,
right?
So that's our goal, right? That's your goal every time you go in the gym, right? You want to stress the body, right? And then when you leave there, you want to recover, right? So that the next time you come back in, you are a better athlete, whether it's strength, whether it's conditioning, whatever it is, right? And that's it.
Awesome. Sean? I think that was a very good definition of stress.
All right, thank you. I'm a descendant of Hans Selye.
Yeah, it's good. Why.
Are you really?
No.
Oh,
so how does this model of stress and how does this functional movement stuff that you do and the mobility piece, how do they come together?
That's a good question. Can we draw a picture? Can you guys see that up there? You wouldn't be able to
Ooh,
see
sure.
it.
It's picture time.
Oh, yeah.
It's picture time.
The moment Drew's been waiting for.
The moment Drew's
been
waiting
for. You know what we'll do is we're always going to encourage everyone who is listening to this podcast to watch it as well. For those of you that don't have access to the amazing picture box,
we're going to have Drew
explain
the picture in a British accent.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead and erase it.
Okay.
All the relevant information.
All wrong, it's already there. And we'll post it again.
This is my favorite.
Is that Ariel Bold that you were using?
Ariel Bold?
It's
Helvetica.
You know, I really tried Ryan Cohen Career New, but I just
yeah.
can't get it out.
No.
It's just not,
that wasn't
it's
it.
Not working.
It wasn't it, but it was good.
So this is the basic principle of what we're looking to do with everybody who comes in, right?
He is drawing a standard piece of life, right?
That's right. So everything below this dotted line indicates load with no pain. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Perfect. Good. So that's low with no pain, right? Everything above that dotted line.
Should I bring these over?
Be gentle with the microphone.
Indicates low with pain. So what we presume, which we think is pretty fair to say, is that mostly everybody is living with some level of tolerable load, right? Whether it's an old disc injury from playing sports, whether the diet is poor, whether you're stressed, whatever it is. And then we have some soft tissue dysfunction too. Right? So now what will happen is what happens? So somebody goes to work. That's a load. Right? We're going to do that in a different color. So you go to work. That's load. Right? You commute. That's load. You go to the gym and you do a given exercise. It's not that bad for you. That's load. But now you come on the next day. You're like, oh, I'm sore, but I can tolerate it. Right? Well, then you go ahead and you do that one movement that's like, oh man, every time I do volume deadlifts, my back just goes to shit. Right? Okay. So then you go to the doctor, and typically what are they going to tell you? Oh, volume deadlifts? That's easy, Mike. Right? That's easy, Drew. We're not going to do volume deadlifts anymore because they obviously cause you pain. Great.
Right. Here's my money.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. So now you're left saying, well, that guy didn't give me what I'm looking to get. What am I supposed to do? I guess I'll go roll around on a roller and, you know, get on a lacrosse ball and stretch my psoas. And I don't know. I've gotten all this content from somebody, so let's go with it. What we like to say is we're going to look at these three things and say, what of them can we have an immediate impact on? Your disc injury, we probably can't, unfortunately. Disc injuries have very... what's the word? Unpredictable response factors. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with that when we treat it, so we work on the structures around it. Then your diet. You've been told by people smarter than us how to eat, and you're not doing it already. So we're certainly not the ones who are going to get you to change your diet. But if we're able to, you know, correct your soft tissue dysfunction, which we're very confident we can do in most cases, all these other boxes just slide down like
right.
Tetris. Right? And now all of a sudden... you're working out and there's no pain. You're able to do your volume deadlifts with no pain. You can even maybe go heavier and add other load, right? You can add stuff on top of that. And then there's things that we can do with you and that your coaches will do with you that'll elevate your capacity line. So we have even more of a gap.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
And then the other thing we like to tell people is that this is, you know, we'll erase that and show you where your coach comes in. Because one thing that we like to try to avoid is letting people think that we're their CrossFit coach, right? We let CrossFit coaches be the CrossFit coach.
Before, and maybe you're going to get to this, but I think, isn't, so that's the goal of really every soft tissue specialist, right? Or the vast majority. So how do we do that while keeping that blue stuff, right? All of the deadlifts, the travel, the work, and everything. Can we really get rid of our soft tissue issues?
I think it depends, okay. Right? So it depends on what your soft tissue problem really is. We've had patients come in where we draw one box, and it's, you know, 100 pounds they need to lose. I'm like, there's nothing else for us to do for you right now except help you lose your weight. Yeah, you have disc issues. Yeah, you have soft tissue dysfunction. But the bigger problem is we need to have you lose weight. So the problem I think people run into is they go and they start to try to blast away the soft tissue stuff, and then it's, I'm still in back pain. Well, yeah, you're still 100 pounds overweight.
Right.
There's still another major block that needs to be taken care of. So one of the things that we are very careful to do is not to just say we're really good at treating soft tissue, so let's treat soft tissue, right? It's, this is the patient. What is going on? What's the most effective thing for them? And in many cases, it's a referral out to a different professional who can give them what they need, and then they can come back and work on the soft tissue.
So you were saying, as your CrossFit coach.
Oh, so this is our one little other graph.
Yeah.
And we'll
back to the drawing board.
Back to the board.
A little painted.
You like to draw?
You like to draw. Now we have a triangle. Very nice. Equilateral or isosceles?
I think that's isosceles. So
yes.
We're going to layer it, right? So down here is flexibility. It's our belief that if you can't move a joint through range of motion passively, you shouldn't be moving that joint under load, right? So flexibility. Then we have isolated strength. Right, we already discussed what flexibility and isolated strength are, and that right in here is where mobility lives.
He's just crashing the party.
Yeah,
just hanging out. Third wheeling it.
That's it. Then we have integrated strength. Oops. So integrated strength is, you know, you're able to move all these joints by themselves, but what happens when we ask you to move them at the same time together to produce force effectively, right?
To produce actual movement patterns, right?
Right. To squat.
Yep.
You can extend your knee, you can extend your hip, but you can't squat, right? So why? And then we have skill.
So the integrated strength is the I worked with someone who was a gymnast. Very, very perform an air squat. There was nothing limiting her with regards to her passive flexibility. When you put any load overhead, Mary, she could not do an overhead squat to save her life. So that would be categorized as a lack of integrated strength.
Yeah, and you also have to remember that each of these has, you know, levels within them.
Yes.
So the air squat itself is integrated strength, and then asking her to air, you know, overhead squat with a PVC pipe is a different level of it, and then you ask her to overhead squat with a barbell is a different level. And then we have skill, which is, can you snatch it? Can you clean it? Can you do it for reps quickly and cycle it over again? We tell our athletes all the time, we live here. Right? If you're having an issue with your flexibility, your isolated strength, your integrated strength, we're going to help you with it. Your coach lives there. We have a little bit of overlap in here where we can help each other, but we don't know why your snatch isn't good, love it, right? I mean, we can deduct because we've coached CrossFit classes and we are CrossFit athletes, and we can deduct, but we're going to leave those things to the people who do that on a regular basis every day, all day, and make that their expertise, and we're going to focus on what we do.
This is geometry porn for anyone who is interested. There is a very expert pyramidal graph, I guess you would say. And then superimposed on top of that is essentially what became a
Venn diagram very quickly there. I didn't see that coming.
I didn't see it coming either. Completely flabbergasted. But it's brilliant.
It's some blue shaded area.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting to note. We do see some overlap with regards to your area of expertise, flexibility, and isolated strength.
and then some overlap with regards to integrated strength. And then the kind of the jurisdiction for the coaches is now to continue to develop that integrated strength and now this extra component of skill. And I think what we've seen in the CrossFit community is, again, I agree with you, there's a glut of information. And this was what we touched on this briefly in our last podcast was, there's just the response is generally just cognitive fatigue when you're looking for diet advice. You are just inundated with a lot of information, a lot of the contradictory information. And generally, in human behavior, the response is a non-response. When you are confronted with just an X, it's the tyranny of choice. When you're confronted with all these choices, the easiest choice available is just to do nothing or continue with your, chosen behavior pattern. And it's the same thing, I believe, with mobility. I think we've been limited for a long time in strength conditioning. The CrossFit community is just looking for those reflexive results. My shoulders feel like shit today. I'm going overhead. Okay, I'm gonna roll around on a crossball for a bit or do this kind of banded distraction stretch that helped me out for a little bit in the past, and I'll feel better today with going overhead. But I'm not creating type of structural changes. And it's not a lack of desire and intent to help myself. As a CrossFit athlete, I never really look at it like this in kind of a tiered or structured fashion. And I think also there's a tendency as an athlete or as a client to perhaps defer too much to a coach whose domain may, be more appropriate towards the skill integrated strength development. As being kind of our health and well-being liaison. So the mobility program that my coach prescribes is sufficient. And I think what's important is that expertise and a more narrow field of expertise is still important. It's important to seek out people who focus maybe on just those two first elements or components. Flexibility in isolated strength if you want to continue to develop the integrated strength and the skill that your coach is going to be able to help. And I'm curious to hear more about your opinions on that, if I'm completely off base in terms of people being more active in terms of seeking out expert help rather than just kind of the colloquial anecdotal, this helped me out, this lacrosse ball drill helped me out, or this banded stretch helped me out. And if what your experience is about that, if you have any recommendations for people who've been frustrated with their lack of progress with regards to their mobility.
Right. I mean, we're all for if you can treat yourself and get better. All right. That's great. If you can, isolate a problem with a lacrosse ball or a band and you feel better from day to day to day, fantastic. Your range of motion is getting better. You're going overhead without any pinching in your shoulder and it goes away and it stays away. Great. Okay, but the problem is going to be is when you're doing that half an hour to an hour every day just to get through your workout, just so you can wake up the next morning feeling like crap, come in the gym and do the same thing over again, you need to find somebody. All right, and that's what we always, we try to empower people. Okay, try this stuff. All right, we have very specific drills that we use. We use a little bit more strength. All right, then just kind of the passive stuff. And it's absolutely try this stuff. This stuff will work in very specific situations. But there is a point in time where you need to get some expert hands on you. All right. For myself, I've spent the last what is it now? 15 years, looking at, health and flexibility and holistic healing and strength and conditioning and being out here and doing it. And having my own problems and trying to address them myself, and I have a very strong understanding of anatomy. I have a very strong understanding of how to find an adhesion, but I have a very hard time resolving it on myself. All right. So for somebody who doesn't have that anatomy background, for somebody who doesn't know how to find that adhesion, good luck, right? Right. Yeah. You're looking for a needle in a haystack or even better, you're closing your eyes and just throwing darts at a dartboard. Right. And so sometimes you'll hit it, right? Sometimes you got the right amount of fireball and natty ice in you. You hit a bullseye.
What a combo.
Right? That makes for a hell of a Sunday.
I saw an ad for if you buy a 30 rack of
Natty Ice, you get two, not one, but two free packs of ramen. I think it might have been the chai. So I went to the store. I got three.
We call that the Patriot Liberty special.
Right, and I made six packs of ramen last night. So.
Wow, so, that was here on the East Coast.
No, I made that last part. I saw that.
Yeah. But would it be totally off base that what I'm getting from this is that as athletes, we ought to be treating our mobility more like skill. More like skill acquisition.
It's a practice. Yeah,
it's a practice,
absolutely.
Something that you have to build habit with. So if you want to get better at the Olympic lifts, you seek out an Olympic lifting coach.
Yeah.
You want to improve your gymnastics, you'd be really well served by finding a gymnastics coach. It doesn't seem like there's been kind of a disconnect, but that's not generally what is, people don't seek out expert help with regards to their mobility. And it may be this kind of penchant for, we need to be able to treat ourselves. We need to be able to perform, rudimentary, remedial, basic kind of maintenance on our own bodies, which is useful to a point. But if you have long-term structural issues, like you described, if the hips never open up for more than a day, you're not seeing long-term improvement, then we need to be ready to acknowledge that, okay, there's someone else that I need to kind of solicit advice from. And I think the trend has been just to continue to kind of compartmentalize our training much to our own, not our benefit.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a lack of coaches. I think there are tons, especially with the way the internet works now, I think there are tons of great knowledge out there, but it's just too much information and lack of systems. And what I see more often than not is it's just kind of our medical system. They treat just the pain, right? Not the symptom of the pain. If the front of their shoulder hurts, then they're gonna just fucking rub it. They're gonna put a lacrosse ball right on it. They're not gonna look at the big picture, right? Like what's causing that? And they're gonna do that right before they work out and go tighten it right back up. What I have a super, super hard time getting people to do, whether it's I've worked with people that have gone on to the NFL, top CrossFit athletes, even the most dedicated people, to get them to sit down when they're at their house and stretch is very, very difficult, mm-hmm. right? And from my understanding, that's when one of the best times we can produce long term change, right? When you're not hot, you're not cold, you're at rest, and that's when you can produce lasting change in tissue length and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in part that's part of the issue. The other part of the issue is what Drew was touching on, which is that athletes treat strength as though it's absolutely inherently necessary to be successful in CrossFit or any sport, to be strong, right? And then their endurance is the same thing. They're like, well, I got to do my Metcons. I got to be working out for short periods of time, long periods of time, different durations, all that stuff. But if they can snatch, if they can squat, if they can press, they don't take into consideration if they're doing it as efficiently as they possibly could, and is the mobility issue part of what's causing that? Is it a structural balance issue that's restricting that? And if people looked to their functional well-being as much as they look to their strength, their endurance, and their skill, I think they would be healthier, they would be more effective.
Absolutely.
And when they were done with their CrossFit careers or whatever athletic career they're in, they would still be able to play with their kids. And then that's really the goal too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, from a lifestyle standpoint, and really from a force production athletic standpoint, it helps to have a better base, right?
Yes.
Even if it's only that you're gonna stay healthy the entire season or whatever, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, absolutely. Longevity is very important, right? I mean, you guys have been in the CrossFit world for a long time, and how many guys do you know that have gone to regionals 1 year and then you don't hear from them again? Because they get hurt, right? They're doing this huge amount of volume, but they're doing it very inefficiently, and their body can handle it for a while, right? But it, at a certain point, when you're structurally disbalanced and you're doing so much volume, you're going to break down, and the long term effects on that on your strength. So okay, I hurt my back. I can't squat as well as I want to squat for the next month now, right? Or I can't deadlift or X, Y, and Z. So now it's you've worked so hard, and now essentially it's a plateau or a step back just because you haven't been focusing on your movement quality, right? So you're not making gains, bro, because you're worried about your back, bro, you know? So
here's what I think is really is conversations that we've had with, you know, guys like Sean, guys like Jeremy, you know, strength and conditioning experts, Mark Belgian, about people who are really well-conditioned, really strong, very, 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 very intelligent. What I think is kind of the tie that binds is that they come from a background, you know, not even just academic, but a background, an athletic background, beyond CrossFit. And I think what kind of tends to be kind of that you know, two-sided edge, that double edge for CrossFit is there's a system now that delivers really expedited results. People see results really quickly with CrossFit. You know, there are athletes that, I'm not one of them, athletes who, you know, within a year and a half of time are games contenders. And I think we've become acclimated to this notion that, yeah, you can see incredibly fast progress with CrossFit properly administered, properly applied. And I think to some extent we now kind of discount the, you know, the time scales for, you know, for practice. And if we're going to treat mobility like a practice, it has to be, it's going to be an incremental kind of iterative process. It's not going to be expedite. It's not necessarily going to be fast. And I feel like there aren't a lot of people who appreciate that. However, the most successful athletes, the most successful business owners, the people who appreciate that there's a time component involved with this. And I think it's just, you know, what I would like to hear from you guys, just kind of your, both of you come from play baseball,
mm-hmm.
correct? And, you know, more than just T-ball level. I had a pretty good OPS T-ball when I was
Croatian
world
champion.
But I'm curious. I'm always curious to expound more on how people's athletic backgrounds.
That was an elbow.
Can you reproduce it? We'll see
about
that.
Can you reproduce it? You farted.
I'm not sure I can do that again. Damn.
It was a one-time
thing. I'm always really curious to hear about how people's athletic backgrounds informed their current practice. How did your athletic background inform and influence the way you examine movement, human movement, and movement specifically within CrossFit?
Want to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I mean, growing up, red-blooded American I am. Playing T-ball, playing baseball, playing football, and playing basketball a little bit. You start to see the transfer. You know, you just start to see those kids who play all three sports versus the kids who are doing one thing, and why. You know, and sometimes it's very, you know, specific. You know, you see the offensive linemen tend to wrestle, right? They're not playing hoop, okay. But what is that common bond between those sports, as far as the skill set, that makes you good at those sports, but also the transfer between them. So from that aspect, that's always intrigued me, you know, like what is that, you know, what is that thing that certain people have that they're just good, right? And then from, you know, why I got involved in the manual medicine field. Was because of injury. Most manual therapists end up going to a manual therapist or physical therapist very early on because they got messed up somehow. And they're like, wow, this is a really cool job. You know, I'd like to do that. So seeing a grade 3 ankle sprain not being taken care of at all, right? Sprain it on a Sunday, go to basketball camp on a Thursday and play 7 games across a weekend with an ankle the size of a cantaloupe. And then watching your speed just go down, you know, exponentially, you know, through football season. And what is that? Why? You know, I used to be able to dunk a basketball, now I can't. You know, what's that about? And what happened there? And there wasn't a lot of good answers for me. So that's
is it something that you thought about then, or is this kind of in retrospect it all makes sense?
It's a lot more retrospect. But at that time it was like, yeah, like I used to run laps around this dude. Like, what happened? Like, I've been active the whole time. What's this about? And you know, like, how, yeah, why can't I dunk anymore? You know, like, what's that about? You know,
why is that guy who I was beating, you know, in the daily wads now? Why am I not beating him? Why am I not beating him?
Exactly.
Why is he getting faster and I'm not progressing?
Exactly. So that I mean, that shaped me very early on. And then what's really shaped me in the last 5 or 6 years has been being over in Croatia. I lived in Croatia for the last 6 years. Got turned on to CrossFit before I went there. And over there, it's kind of the Wild West when it comes to coaching and manual therapy. There's no rules. All right.
I'm a doctor in Croatia.
You are.
Yeah.
You are. You don't know it, but any one of you out there, you can be a doctor. Right.
Yeah.
And so basically using that as a laboratory, I got turned on to CrossFit, and then I was able to get in with the baseball team because I wanted to play baseball, and I was an American, so automatically I'm better than most of them. Right.
Manikensky number one.
So then it was, okay, how can we make these guys better? And it was, you know, getting your head into the books and into, you know, the literature and saying, how can we be very effective for these guys? And then they were very successful, so it led to rowing. Okay, well, what do rowers need? All right, how do we develop that? And from a mobility aspect, what is their demand versus a baseball player versus a track athlete? And looking their mobility and strength demands across those things. And then the CrossFit athlete, which needs all of it, right? CrossFit will expose you in every way possible. And just so that's really kind of led me along this path. So, Sean?
For me, it was, I've always been athletic. I've always played sports, but I was never a great athlete. Right, you know, I was good at baseball. I threw a ball.
Don't say that about yourself.
It's true, right? So, I mean, I ran cross country, and I was the fifth guy on the team. So I scored, but it wasn't anything great. I wrestled the guy in front of me in my weight class at my school. Took eighth in the national freestyle, so he just beat the shit out of me in practice every day.
What weight class was that, by the way?
I think it was 103.
Wow.
Kudos to Sean for keeping the weight off after high school.
Yeah.
Nice. He's still the bantamweight.
Yeah,
115 now.
At least 115.
Yeah.
150, 156, 157 now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Beefy.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Beefy.
So, I know. Ladies, watch out. You know, then it was basketball, and basketball for me, I wasn't very good at anything. I couldn't dribble well, I couldn't shoot that well. I was the hustle guy, right? And in baseball, I was pretty good. But so for me, it was always just outwork the guy across from you, right? If you want to beat him, outwork him. And I wanted to be a manual therapist. I wanted to be a chiropractor, mostly because I had the influence of my father having done it before me. Not the way I do it, but, you know, I'd seen him help people and I wanted to help people. You know, we had professional baseball players coming over to the house because my father was treating them and things like that. It was exciting to me, right? But then the reason why I've kind of taken the direction, the steer away from the way he treats, the way I treat now, the way we treat now, is, you know, CrossFit is now the sport that I guess I spend most of my time doing. And because I don't have the natural athletic gifts that some other guys out there have, my only opportunity to be better than people is to outwork them. And every time I've tried to outwork people, my body is broken down, right? So, you know, I've had knee pain, I've had elbow pain, I've had wrist pain, I've had neck pain. You name it. I was walking a dog one day. I felt like I got shot in the neck by a blow dart and I couldn't move my arm or my head. I have a cervical disc injury. You know, it's just, I knew I needed somebody to help me, you know? And so it was, wow, if I'm breaking down this often, so are other people. Because I'm used to grinding myself into the ground just to beat people who are supposed to beat me. So now all of a sudden I can't beat them. You know, I can't do these things because my body's breaking down and I'm looking for somebody to help me and there isn't somebody.
You're just adding too many blue boxes.
Man. Yeah, I was adding blue boxes and I wasn't taking them away. But, you know, so I go get adjusted, you know, and it didn't work. And I would go to a physical therapist and it didn't work. And I go get a massage and it didn't work. I get acupuncture and it didn't work. Tried changing my diet and it didn't work. And it was, what is going to work? So I finally found, you know, these modalities that were working for me by people who were practicing them from ART, which is kind of like the level one of soft tissue. It's your introductory level to soft tissue treatment. But it had marginal results for me. And a marginal result, I was like, wow, I might be able to move this is cool. And then it was, you know, digging. What's the next step into ART? How do I take ART and make it more effective? You know, okay, how do I balance that out with the physical therapy that seemed to make sense for me, but never really completed the deal?
Right.
And then, you know, do the adjustments still have value? I always felt like they made me feel better when I was growing up. So you add those things together, and then you bring somebody in like Jeremy who's smart and has similar background to me. And it's, you know, we just put it all together, and all those influences make us who we are now. And that, you know, that's not just our own personal experiences, but the experiences of the, you know, the people in the forefront of the field. You know, your great coach, your Kelly Stretz, those guys out there are doing a great job and making it more relevant that you do a good job in your own office, or people are going to look at you like, I saw this thing from this other guy. Can you explain it to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did it work for me? Why didn't it work for me? And
right.
So we needed to elevate our game,
mm-hmm.
which took us to where we are now.
Absolutely. One thing that stood out about what you said just now is that idea, like, I think in our society, this idea of, or there's just a premium put on work, just working and build, but the body doesn't work that way, right?
No.
We have to have equal stress and recovery, right? And so over time, those fucking blue boxes are just adding up,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a matter of time, you know, and they're... I think in CrossFit, it's new, so I'm not sure what will happen long term. But
we
I think
how new
now,
it is.
Also,
we forget how new it is.
I think some of them are just getting lucky. You know, Rich. I think Rich takes good care of his body more than most people know. I heard he gets a chiropractic session every day. Most people don't have that luxury.
Right.
But a lot of these top guys are just putting in so much volume, and maybe they're just doing things that are unprecedented, and the research just isn't there yet, and it will be there. But it's breaking a lot of the rules that we think we know.
Here's the thing with the research. I'm sorry, did you want to say something?
No, you got it.
Here's the thing with the research that becomes a bit of an issue,
mm-hmm.
right? You do $5 million in research, $10 million in research to develop a pill that's going to produce $1 billion in profit margin. It's worth it, right? You do that same kind of work to come up with a medical procedure that you're going to be able to sell billions of dollars of devices in. It's worth the work. What chiropractor is going to spend $5 to $10 million doing the research to
right.
prove that the soft tissue manipulation that they're doing and the exercise in the gym that they're prescribing is having a quantifiable result based on, you know, electromyography and EMG and
yeah.
MRI and all that kind of, it's just not going to happen. So
too many acronyms.
Yeah,
well,
sorry.
Unless someone developed the finger blaster.
The finger blaster would
right,
be effective.
Right. Save your thumbs.
Yeah,
that
might
make
be.
That can make dozens of dollars.
It could.
Literally,
you know, so, so for us, it's anecdotal, you know, and we can measure it, but they're not really scientific experiments in the vein of a scientific experiment. So the research is slower to come, but I think the thing that people don't realize about the top-level CrossFit athletes, who at least who I've worked with, and, you know, professional athletes in baseball and other sports like that who Jeremy's worked with and who we know, is the only difference between them and you, and I don't mean you or you, I mean the proverbial you, right, is...
Yeah, you don't know me.
I don't know you, right. It's you know, we all have the same needs musculoskeletally. It's access and availability. You know, so the guy who plays professional baseball comes off the field and gets treated almost every day. The guy who comes out of the gym after a hard workout gets in his car and goes to work. And it's not because he doesn't need the same treatment. It's because it's not available to him. He can't afford it or he hasn't thought to get it.
I think that to me is, you know, really demonstrative about the kind of this paradox in CrossFit. It's an evidence-based sport, an evidence-based fitness methodology that is still largely driven by anecdotal evidence and anecdotal training methodologies. And this is what I find really new, but it is something that is changing. It's something, you know, I think you guys are really representative and indicative of that change is bringing, and Mike, this is also something you comment, having, you know, worked with LSU strength department, is CrossFit athletes, I think, need to start training, or, you know, more like athletes with respect to
You know, even though, you know, football, soccer, baseball have defined parameters and a more narrow set of skills, whereas CrossFit, we have to kind of be good at everything. It's like you think, like you talked about it. But, you know, CrossFitters have a nagging injury. They find a way to work around it. They find a way to keep stacking boxes, you know, keep piling dysfunction on top of dysfunction. And, you know, which then they wonder why they don't have that longevity or why they continue to see deterioration or decline in their performance. And I think it's a trend that needs to be reversed. I think it has largely been due to just a lack of, you know, quantifiable or, you know, valid evidence. I think it's, there has been kind of a paucity of good evidence as to, you know, this is a workable system. You know, the saying, you know, that you, this is a squat program that's going to elicit improvements in your squats. This is the endurance program that's going to improve your endurance. But with regards to mobility and flexibility, there's just a lot of ambient noise. There's a lot of information that is either incomplete or contradictory or just not really usable. And, you know, those kind of economies of scale haven't really worked their way into the CrossFit community the same way that they do in other professional sports. And I think it's really excited to have, you know, guys like you who are trying to introduce that, a usable template for athletes who otherwise don't have the access to the information to be able to effectively treat that dysfunction, to start doing so in a more meaningful manner. And I think it's not coincidental that the people who are making these types of contributions to advancing CrossFit training come from an athletic background outside of CrossFit. Things that I think that otherwise, you know, yeah, that seems like a given. You know, why wouldn't you be doing these things as a CrossFit? I think, yeah, it's have just been largely ignored with regards to CrossFit, and that could be just me, you know, make it just complete wild. But I don't think so.
Well, I would say there's also, I mean, that problem is not just CrossFit. That is in any sort of manual therapy or, you know, non allopathic medical field, so physical therapy, massage therapy, chiropractic, acupuncture, whatever, right? That there really hasn't been a systematic way to review this stuff out there, and that's why somebody goes to a chiropractor, and it quote unquote doesn't work, right? Then they go to another chiropractor, and the chiropractor treats them very differently, and it may or may not work, and then if that's usually when people quit on chiropractic and say, oh, that sucks.
I'll stick to my lacrosse ball humping.
Right. Or then they say, okay, now I'm going to try physical therapy. And they have their way. And each physical therapist is different. Right. And so that's what's kind of what I dislike about our profession. Right. Is that, you know, we're all of us, chiropractors, PTs, everybody, we all have the same goal. We should all have the same goal. Right. It's to restore function. Right. But there really hasn't been a very well-produced, systematic way to get that, to identify dysfunction and then to correct it, right? From the Dr. Brady, integrative diagnosis, great stuff. He's put a system out to find the stuff, and that's the stuff that we're using, and that's the stuff that we're starting to bring to the CrossFit athlete. Like, okay, you're missing ankle dorsiflexion, right? Why? It's a very short list of why. Right, it's not, oh, I think it's this, I think, no, it's a very short list, and we need to systematically address that list and retest to see if you're getting better, not only in that treatment session, but session to session.
Right.
Right. So.
And to take that a step further, it's, you're missing ankle dorsiflexion, so how does that affect your squat?
Right.
Right, like, I'm a
perfect
example.
My ankle doesn't hurt.
Yeah, my ankle's fine. My ankle's fine, my squat just sucks. Mm-hmm. Right, but all of a sudden, you find yourself at the bottom of a squat trying to stand up, and it's ass first. Right, your butt goes up, and then you're deadlifting or doing a good morning with your back because
right.
You can't stay upright. And it's, you know, why can't it stay upright? Well, because your knees can't translate forward, so your center of gravity falls backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way for you to change that is to lean forward and put it in the middle again. So having the ability to isolate exactly what's causing a movement restriction is powerful in the ability to improve movement, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love it. Can you maybe we just use that example, ankle dorsiflexion. I want like one So we got to wrap up, but before we go, one like specific example of a super common, maybe just mobility restriction that you see in CrossFit athletes or athletes in general, and what, and I don't want you to give away, you know, too much of your free shit, but
let's leave it with
what,
a nugget.
Yeah,
coming
yeah,
back.
What can they
website.
Do? What specifically can they do to start to correct that? To begin to correct that.
So it's a good question. You know, it becomes a very, very, very simple answer once you've looked at the whole joint,
mm-hmm.
right? And the ankle is a great example because everybody's twisted their ankle and almost nobody has done anything about it,
mm-hmm.
right? So you twist your ankle when you're 18 years old and then for the next 15 years, you don't do anything. And then one day you're like, ah, you know, my ankle's still it's a little bit weird today. I don't know why that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone said to them, well, when you were 18, you twisted it, you never did anything about it, they would look
no
at you
way.
And say, you're a fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
Right? But so we see a lot of ligamentous shortening in the ankle, which means that basically the ligaments have been stretched at one time, scar tissue or adhesion formed in those ligaments and changed the way that they lengthen. So that the ligaments have a little bit of elasticity to begin with, but... they're going to have even less now because the scar tissue's in there and it's limiting the range of motion. And what will happen is somebody will feel that stress in the front of their ankle. So if you go to test your dorsiflexion, you feel a stress in the front. You feel like the reason that your range of motion doesn't continue to move is the front of your ankle is pinching down. That usually, you know, there's never if A then B, but usually indicates some kind of ligamentous restriction. You know, oftentimes we have people who, you know, depending what the background is, a lot of runners will come in and they have issues with their tibialis posterior muscle where, you know, it's a very small limiting muscle of the ankle, but it can, right? And it can manifest in the form of a shin splint type of condition or other things. Something as simple as, you know, toe movement, toe range of motion, the ability to extend your toes, that can cause limited ankle mobility depending on the position that the toes are in when you're trying to mobilize the ankle. So... there's a lot of different things that we see, and it's you know, it's important to be able to determine which one is most important because
mm-hmm.
some people have more than one.
Okay, so are you getting at, I'm trying to get something for people to do, but is it kind of like not, you don't have enough information, you would need more information to give someone a specific recommendation?
No, because the exercise that we would give people
mm-hmm.
aren't going to hurt the person who doesn't need it,
right?
So we can say, for example, eccentric dorsiflexion standing on top of, you know, one or two 45-pound plates,
right.
Where you would elevate your body with both feet and lower yourself down through full range of motion with the one leg, and at the very end of the range of motion, bend the knee, right? That's an exercise that can help anybody.
Can you explain that a little bit? I've never heard of that. I'm familiar with eccentrics and everything, just like stretching, mobilizing in that manner.
So,
I like it.
Yeah. So what we like to do is static stretching has shown that in order to make a change, you need 30 minutes of continuous static stretching
mm-hmm.
in order to actually lengthen a muscle.
Yep.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Nobody got time.
Nobody.
To increase the number of sarcomeres, right?
Yeah.
The lengthen. Yeah.
So what we're doing is we're saying we want you to put your muscle through a load and lengthen it at the same time. Right? To basically to realign the fibers as best as possible.
Okay.
Because when they grow back in haphazardly after you've torn them through a workout. So we want to realign them. Take a box of spaghetti and look at it, the way the spaghetti looks through the window. That's how we want you to look.
Right.
Which what you look like most likely is you took that box of spaghetti, you slammed it on the floor, you picked it back up, and now you're looking at it.
Right.
We want to get those to line nice and straight up. So the exercise that we like to prescribe for the ankle very often is stand up on a 45-pound bumper plate, maybe two 45-pound bumper plates, right? So stacked on each other. Using both legs and a balance point to hold onto the wall so you don't slip, rip a rig, whatever. Use both legs to come all the way up onto your tippy toes. So pull full plantar flexion of the foot. And then we want you to slowly, for about a 3 to 5 count, lower yourself down on one leg at a time. So that ankle goes from full plantar flexion to full dorsiflexion with a slight bend in the knee at the very end of the range of motion.
So the person's foot isn't standing entirely on the 45-pound.
Right. Balls of the foot
balls
and toes
feet.
Of the foot.
Yeah. So the heel is going to go.
Heel will drop below.
The heel
will be on a step.
Yeah.
Right. So a step would work as well. And what that's going to do is it's going to put tension across your muscles while you're lengthening them. And that's going to help the fibers line up more appropriately.
Gotcha.
And while it's not actually going to add resting length to the muscle, it will add functional length to the muscle because those fibers are now lined up straight as opposed to being crisscrossed and hatched, all that
love
kind of stuff.
Love it. Sets and reps on that.
Really depends on the severity of your issue, but you know, you can, a good starting point would be, you know, 2 to 3 sets alternating legs. So you would do all your reps on the left and all of your reps on the right.
Okay.
20 to 30 reps. It
should
20
to 30. Okay. And what's the tempo?
The tempo?
Yep.
Up with 2 feet to an immediate. There's
yep.
no tempo on the way up, and then 3 to 5 seconds.
3 to 5 on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And you're taking it from a flexed position into an extended position,
so
lengthened position.
A plantar flex position, which would be you're basically standing on your tippy toes.
Yep.
To a dorsiflex position, which is you're basically standing on your heels, except your
right.
heels are suspended off the plate.
Right. So if you wanted to do this with your bicep, start here, right, and lengthen, right?
A great, you know, yes and no.
Okay.
The bicep requires some other stuff added to
okay.
go through full range of motion. We would want to work with the forearm a little bit and the shoulder
gotcha.
In different planes. But, you know, it's kind of like doing a negative chin up. Would
okay.
be the best example just for a bicep, I would say.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Awesome. One more thing. Before we go, P.S. This is me and Drew like to do these thought experiments from time to time.
Oh.
And feel free. We could just. I guess we could edit this out if you don't want to answer this. But
No.
Drew's not allowing
continuous.
That.
No, we're not editing.
Okay.
You sat down at the table. There's a task on your stand. You have to answer the questions.
You can. I would like to hear both of your opinion on this, your take on this. But if you're, are you both married?
Yes.
Yep.
With kids.
With kids.
Yeah, he's fresh.
Fresh.
Yeah, I have a
fresh
new
child.
Huh?
Yeah, two weeks and 6 days old.
Wow.
Yeah,
2 years. He's already. He's like, I just can't wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we sleep again? Sleep
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if your wife, the love of your life, if she want, if her only fantasy was to use a strap-on on you, right? That like that's her biggest fantasy in the world. Would you do it?
That is a tough question.
It's
no.
No?
Well, here's the thing.
No.
Is,
you're just going to deny her?
Maybe let her slap me in the face with it or something, but she's not putting it in any of the holes.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Is it maybe she doesn't actually want to follow through with that fantasy, but knowing that you would be willing to put yourself in such an emotionally compromising position is really the only thing that matters to her. This was the thought experiment we used in Miami with a number of, you know, we're not going to name any names, but a number of, you know, prominent CrossFit and grit athletes. And I was encouraged by the degree of sexual
open-mindedness.
Right. I mean, that's something that most, you know, heterosexual men would not feel comfortable with.
Shy away.
But I can say definitively that if my girlfriend, Chrissy, ever wanted to, you know, use a strap.
Does Chrissy know this?
I think the only point of contention, the bone to pick, as it were, would be the size.
What's the gauge on that?
Oh, here's the thing: is you could
that is a great question.
You could request a starter.
Yeah. Yes.
You could request something. I mean, obviously, we don't want to hemorrhage anything. I mean, this is virgin territory for the most part. I don't know. Maybe no judgments, but it's. I think it's more so. It's just what is your you know, Jeremy? What are you? I mean, Sean's obviously not willing to. I mean.
Yeah, my gut reaction was...
Your wife
was
in tremendous pain to give you your first child. You're not even willing to take a little bit of...
Entertain a
micro-penis
type situation.
Well, that adds a new layer. The micro-penis.
Yeah.
Now I'm a little bit more on the fence.
Right.
You know, first reaction, I'm picturing some fist.
There was a recent study, right, that the average erect male penis was like 5.7 inches.
I don't know.
Outside of our scope.
I need to
touch up on
our camera guy, Rye, you showed me that study, right? Or,
yeah.
Okay, was it what, 5.7 inches?
Was that a personal study?
British.
No,
longitudinal journal.
Study.
British Medical Journal, or British Society of Urologists or something like that.
Oh, shit, that sounds
smart.
18,500 men. And the average is just under 5.
Was that just British men?
So
right, I don't know.
No, I mean, so but so
there's the question.
It's a cosmopolitan. So, but the British Dick Doctor Society.
Yeah.
5.5, you know, how many, I don't know how many centimeters that is, but 5.5 inches, let's just say it's two standard deviations below the average.
Yeah, 2.5 below the standard deviations below the norm is considered a micropenis.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're looking, but still sort of, we're still looking around, like, yeah, around, we're saying a 3.5 to 4 inch range.
So we're getting more into, like,
girth,
like a thumb in the butt?
Yeah,
kind of action.
That's basically what we're talking about.
Okay,
that's what we're talking. Let's start there.
Thumb, okay, yeah, okay.
If your wife wanted to thumb your ass,
yeah, but not just the nail. we have to go to the joint.
Oh yeah, you're going full depth on.
Yeah,
that.
You're going.
Right.
You're plumbing. This
well,
is not
I
just
mean,
the tips.
I mean, and that's another detail too. Is she going with this strap on? Is she going balls deep, rubber balls deep, or is she just?
No, there are no balls on the strap on.
Well,
like that's okay.
Depending on the straps on.
Okay, see now we're getting fixated.
The devil is in the details.
The devil's not in the details. A four inch cylindrical.
Have you ever taken a dip before? The devil's in the details. I'm assuming.
So you would do it. You would. You wouldn't even entertain it.
Well done, Jeremy.
What if she gave you an ultimatum? She gave you an ultimatum. I will divorce you
if I don't take a strap on in the ass.
You know what?
Yeah.
I won't make you answer that.
I don't mind answering it. I mean, I think the size thing definitely has an impact, but I'm
size doesn't matter. Sean, the king of the unintentional pun.
Yeah, this would be a sit down and a let's understand why you
right.
feel like it's important to put that in my ass.
And if she had a compelling enough reason, if she was completely intractable, if she was inflexible, if she, you know, was.
If there's one, she's
inflexible.
If there's one
and
person,
you're about to be integrated in a strong fashion.
If there's one person in the world who's gonna be allowed to put a cake size thickness, a kickstand thickness size.
One Twix,
short,
not both.
One Twix, 3.5 inches. I'm still not comfortable with it. But you're already starting to convince me I should be doing it. So I have a feeling that her sitting there would be pretty compelling too. I don't know.
She may never want to. It's more so. It's just like a woman saying, it's not that I want you to do dishes. It's that I want you to want.
I
to
want
do
you
dishes.
To.
I want.
Do
I want. I want to know that the things that are important to me are important to you. And should she ever communicate to you that is important to her, that she has this latent desire to put a starter dick inside you, that you would at least be open to it. You'd be amenable to it. And I think that's what's important. Is it's like, yeah, I feel like it's that scene, you know, where Indiana Jones is like at the precipice. He's like, you just got to take that leap and hope that that bridge is underneath you. You know, and I think that that's
it's a little different.
About. No, it's not. I mean, that could kill him. We're just talking about you being uncomfortable for a little bit. Indy was
just
risking his life.
You. We just want to prepare
Indy
you
was risking his life.
Anyone else to think about these kind of things.
Yeah,
they do come up.
I guess they do.
I think those are,
and that's what we'll pick up next time.
And those are our big takeaways. I think those are our big takeaways in talking about the primacy of flexibility and isolated strength as pertains to integrated strength. Please make if you're interested, follow Sean's recommendations in terms of the eccentric loading of the to improve the ankle dorsiflexion.
Where can I follow them?
Well, you can follow them. Sean erased everything, but how about
sorry. So we're our Instagram is at ActiveLifeRx. And our website is livetheactivelife.com. And we just shot 53 videos that should be up sometime soon that will be on our mobility blog that we keep on a daily basis that we're going to be changing to make it a little more user-friendly in the near future. But you'll be able to find all our stuff on there.
Sweet.
You can also find the same user handle for Sean on Scruff.
Yes.
Grindr. And Tinder.
Brazzers.
Subscription, man.
There's a chat room. There are chat room capabilities.
Yes, that's true.
Personal handles?
Don't have one.
Nope. Cool. You can follow me at Michael Cashew, Brute at Brute.strength on Instagram.
At D Canavero. I'm not going to try and, you can spell the last name. Good on you. You can also follow me in real life by saying hello. Hi, my name is Drew, odd internet person.
All right, guys, appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. It's been great.
Thank you.